has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
Carl, you might be able to kind of, I guess, maybe relate with this since you're the original trilogy generation. Not that that makes us any better fans, but of course it does.
It does.
But I had this Alec Guinness Obi-Wan moment in classroom last week. The kids finally came back after their vacation, and as I was calling roll, a voice in the back of the classroom said, "I'm here, Coach Cleffer." Now, granted, I spent roughly 20 years coaching one sport or another, but I haven't coached in probably 5 or 6 years. And so I had this moment, and I sat back and took my glasses off and said, "I've not heard that name in a long time."
Oh, jeez.
Long time. And of course, these kids of today, they had no idea what I was talking about. But there in the moment, I had my little Obi-Wan moment, being, you know, not just the crazy old man from the Dune Sea, but the good old days when I was Coach Cleffer.
How does it make you feel that you're teaching kids that don't get the association?
Well, I see it as a challenge, and by the end of the school year, one of two things will happen. Either they'll understand Star Wars references, or they'll see me in summer school.
Harsh.
In this economy, Barb, it's I almost called you Bob.
Bob.
I got to finish this coffee off. Actually, if I said your name with a Canadian accent, would it be Bob?
My mom actually said my name with her British accent, and so my nickname all through high school was Bob.
I like where this is going. Barbara Ann Christine Brown. It's job security in this economy. If a kid doesn't get the Star Wars references, we just enroll them in summer school. It's fine. And they get to have me for a month from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. every day. And it's great for me because it's job security. Yes. Well, listen, I don't want to spend all our time talking and reminiscing about Obi-Wan references, but of course, joining me on this 196th episode of Unmistakably Star Wars in the USW World Headquarters, located in the San Francisco Bay Area, the one, the only, Barbara Ann Christine Brown, the Canadian.
Yeah, that's me. Hey, everybody.
Wow. Proud of your namesake, I can tell. Also joining us from south of the Mason-Dixon line, from the great state of Alabama, with the banjo on his knee, the one and only Thunder Down Under. He is Carl Hassler.
Yes, Carl Austin Hassler. Thank you.
Oh,
glad to be here.
Austin Hassler. Okay. That's good to know. That's good to know. Also joining us, as always, from the city of brotherly love, she is the salty one, the one, the only salty Philly herself, Eve.
Oh, well, hello, everybody.
Eve, you just had a birthday. Congratulations on that. Thank you for being born.
Happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank
you. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Well, thank you, everyone.
That new voice you hear is brand new to the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. He is the voice behind Friends of the Force podcast, which we love and adore. That is the one and only Brad Whipple. Brad, welcome to USW.
Hi. Thanks for having me. And if you're wondering, Whipple, no, I am not Mr. Whipple from those Charmin commercials. I am not
there
related.
There you go.
So, that is unfortunate. That is unfortunate.
Those of you wondering.
another reference that Devin's students would not get,
it's
but
true.
I got it.
It's true. Yeah.
They're going to learn a lot in summer school.
It's true. It's true. Like how just to agree with everything I say.
Yes.
Listen, we've had kind of a fun news week. Decide for yourself, dear listener, if it's a big news week or not, because we've got some confirmations of unconfirmed things to talk about. Among them, it's officially, almost official, big news in the Dune Sea region of Tatooine. We'll talk about that, of course. And then Disney resists the resistance and conforms to the rule of two when it comes to its own animated series. We'll talk about that. And then another Star Wars trilogy, more unstable than the innards of an asteroid-dwelling space worm? Stick around. We'll talk about that as well. And then our closer look tonight. I'm excited about this because this brings up some big questions for where Disney and Lucasfilm may go with the future of storytelling in Star Wars. And that, of course, is they have digital scans of all the lead actors in the Star Wars stories. So might we see some films or some series come out that are using purely scanned replicas of those actors? And is that a good thing, a bad thing? Is it ethical, unethical? I don't know. We'll chat about it in our closer look tonight. But that being said, let's jump into our top three news stories of the week.
Number three.
All right, cue the Elton John music for... Damn it, what song is it, Barb? Benny and the Jets.
Oh.
Because we got Benioff and Weiss. I am just hitting on like one out of 12 cylinders tonight. It's horrible. That's what happened.
The other selection would have been Tiny Dancer for Hold Me Close, Tiny Phasma is
right,
also your favorite.
Right,
too,
yes. So. That is a favorite. But I knew we weren't talking Phasma tonight. Although,
yeah.
I do want to give a shout out to our very own Regina Sanders, who notified me via text this last week that she's going to meet Gwendolyn Christie at an upcoming con, and she's going to get Gwen's autograph for this guy right here.
Nice.
Amazing.
It is.
Gina, you're fabulous.
Yeah, well, she was fabulous well before that, but here's my question.
Yes,
this is not part of our notes, but I'm just going to throw this out there. And Brad, I'm actually going to throw this question to you. Listen, there's a lot of Captain Phasma photos that you can purchase from Tops or wherever and have those autographed. I was kind of thinking, though, you know, that photo shoot that Gwendolyn Christie did for, I believe it was Vanity Fair, and she's got the Phasma armor on but the helmet off, and there's also one with her in a Phasma print dress. I'm thinking about photoshopping myself into one of those. Brad, your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that might be a great idea. It'd probably shock her when she sees it, first off. So it's going to stand apart from all the other stuff she's autographing. I think that would probably be the way to go, honestly.
I knew there was a reason Brad became part of this network. Brad, you're good to go. You've just been green lighted.
I'm an enabler. You'll learn that very quick.
That's okay. Those are the only people I hang out with. for good reason. So Benioff and Weiss, right? We heard quite a while ago that they were going to have an entire Star Wars trilogy to be their sandbox they could play around in. And then, lo and behold, this little kind of indie company you may have heard about called Netflix came along and offered them just shy of the GDP of Sardinia. And in doing that, the question now becomes, well, they were recently quoted as saying, well, they're for sure writing the treatment for one Star Wars movie, and there's still going to be showrunners from the other, but that's kind of backtracking from some of the original reports that said they were going to be writing each of the three films that are going to be in their trilogy. So, Carl, let me just kind of throw it your way. Is it time to hit the panic button yet? Is this yet another disaster for Disney/Lucasfilm when it comes to Star Wars properties?
Devin, I love Lucasfilm, and I'm always behind them, and I'm always like, yeah, it's going to be okay. They've pulled, but we keep hearing so much stuff in the background. I am getting a little concerned. I don't know about hitting the panic button, but, I mean, they got all the money in the world, so why can't they just get this straight? I mean, you know, how is Netflix kind of outbidding Benioff and Weiss out from under them, and why are they not taking priority, and... I don't know, Devin. It is frustrating, and I'm just ready for another one, you know, that we've been put on hold for movies coming out at all, and this seems like it's going to put it back even further. I need more Star Wars, Devin. I'm getting old. I mean, I can't, you know, I'm going to be gone before, you know, they have any new ones. So please, Disney, get on the ball. Let's get these things out. Let's get a bunch of them going. Thank you. Please.
Carl, as the card-carrying member of the USWB team that is most eligible for the early bird buffet,
yes,
there's no doubt you're right. You are getting older, and it's true that we're running the risk here of this complete train wreck. At least it has a potential for that. Let me just kind of go into one of the quotes here. This is coming from Dork Side of the Force, which has historically been pretty accurate when it comes to these things. It says, sources say the Game of Thrones pair is writing a treatment for a Disney Star Wars trilogy and is committed to pinning, here it is, at least one of the films. The original deal was to write all three. It's unclear if the duo, who also now have features for Fox and Disney carved out, will do more than just write for Star Wars. Eve, it is your complete fault and doing that you got me interested into Game of Thrones to begin with. Yep. I think I binged 7 seasons or so within the span of about 2 weeks.
Yes.
Who Same needs problem. Sleep? It's overrated. Let me ask you, though, because we've had our off-air talks about Game of Thrones and what that type of writing and spectacle might mean for Star Wars. And so when you read this, is it for you kind of, lowering the flag to half mast, so to speak? Is this kind of, it's somewhat of a victory that at least they're maybe writing something and they're still show running something, but not getting them as writers for all three?
Half mast. I feel like as soon
mast.
As the Netflix...
You called it a 5/16, like whatever you want to sure. throw a ratio 5/16.
That feels good. 5/16. As soon as the big... What did they say? 9-figure deal for Netflix just kind of boomed into the Twitter trending topics a couple weeks ago. I feel like my mind immediately was like, oh, I don't think the Star Wars thing is going to take priority now. And... I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, because while 7 seasons of Game of Thrones were just absolute amazing, like, just start to finish, you know, it had moments where it was like, oh, that was unnecessary, completely and totally unnecessary, but I'm still on board. Season 8 came, and it was just kind of like, when you see writers and creators are completely disinterested in something, it shows. Mm. And if that's what they're going to go into Star Wars with now, because they have this massive amount of money deal with Netflix, that's where my concern lies now, is in their level of interest in the projects that they are going to still continue to helm.
Yeah, and isn't it fascinating? So, season 8 had some seriously incredible writing, right? I think it was the second episode in when they're just in anticipation of the big battle. That was one of the best episodes on television that I've ever seen.
Ever, yeah.
At the same time, Eve, I think it's fair to say that much of season 8 was, as you and I often say, straight out of Wompton.
Completely.
It absolutely kind of made me go, I don't understand what I'm getting. It was like seeing two completely different entities pin different parts of the storyline.
Yes,
Barb, from your perspective, does this have the potential to have a long-lasting dent in Star Wars? If for whatever reason, whether it's the Netflix deal, whether... the parts of the Star Wars process that are staying too true aren't quote-unquote box office smashes. Is this something that could set Disney and Lucasfilm back even further?
I mean, it definitely has the potential for that. As we've seen, it's like directors for Star Wars either make it or break it, it seems. And, you know, Benioff and Weiss, I love them for giving us Game of Thrones up to season 8. And
wow.
And, like, I love Game of Thrones, and I do love Benioff and Weiss. I think they're talented and incredible, and I think, as I've said previously on the show, I think them doing an episode or 3 episodes of Star Wars would be pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
Especially if they were given something in the Old Republic. Mm-hmm. But it's just, I cannot fathom what it looks like to have everything on their plate that they have.
Yeah.
And to do everything justice when they've got these Netflix deals and this trilogy for Star Wars. It just, to me, that seems like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am not in that industry. So maybe people as talented as them can do it and can give us some real quality stuff. Who am I to say that? But there is that part of me that's just like, it seems a little thin, you know, to have them doing all of this.
Yeah.
And I'd rather somebody just focus on Star Wars and give us something that's really good.
And it brings up an interesting topic, right? Like, I'm super fascinated, and Brad, I want to kind of throw this to you. I'm super fascinated with, hey, we've signed these people to do this trilogy or whatever. And I'm not just talking Benioff and Weiss. That seems to be kind of within the industry itself. And then, oh, here's another offer from somebody else. I mean, we see this not only in Hollywood, we see it in, of course, professional athletics, things like that. Brad, from your opinion, when you see things like this, do you think that, okay, one, here we go again, or two, do you think actually this might actually be a great opportunity for whether it's an unheralded or unknown female director or a director, a person of color, or a writer that's a person of color, do you think this is actually a good opportunity for people that don't yet have a foothold in the business at the same level as Benioff and Weiss do.
Yeah, I think it's actually a really great opportunity because I for one, wasn't the biggest fan of the final season of Game of Thrones. Mm. I liked where it ended up, just not necessarily how we got there.
Yeah.
And I think that was the result of them probably feeling the pressure to catch up, get everything wrapped up so they could start planning for these Star Wars trilogies. So I think them stepping aside, taking a little bit of a backseat in this situation is really good to, like you said, give more opportunities to, you know, other diverse mm-hmm. people. And I would like to see Lucasfilm continue to expand the diversity and who they're hiring, not just at the executive level, you know, like with Kathleen Kennedy and Michelle Rejwan, but also the writers and the directors and much of what we've seen so far has kind of been, you know, kind of this much of the same, you know, with like Jon mm-hmm. Favreau, Filoni, sure. Benioff and Weiss, Rian Johnson, who are all, you know, great. But I think there is still that lack of diversity that a lot of people would like to see. So I hopefully this is a good opportunity for them to bring that in.
Yeah, I think, well said, Brad, but are bringing it back to you. Would you agree with that? Would you add things to that? Are there any particular names that come to you as far as like, oh, you know, Patty Jenkins was at the top of her game when mm-hmm. Wonder Woman first came out and mm-hmm. everybody's like, Patty Jenkins, Star Wars, let's make it happen. Mm-hmm. And whether there was any behind the scenes talks with that or not, I don't know. Other folks have talked about Ava DuVernay, who had a Netflix miniseries come out very recently. Is there anyone that you can think of off the top of your head that would be like, oh, that might be an interesting opportunity mm-hmm. for this person to actually kind of get into the world of Star Wars?
Just a random person that hasn't been in Star Wars yet that I think has the talent to be in it. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, that would maybe have an opportunity to do the writing, directing, the show running part of things mm-hmm. where that isn't happening if Benioff and mm-hmm. Weiss are, you know, chasing Oprah Winfrey level money with Netflix.
Yeah, I've actually had some thoughts on this recently. Two names that jump out to me right away are Ryan Coogler and mm-hmm. even possibly Alfonso Cuarón.
Yep.
I think either one of those two guys. Again, I know they're two men. I can't really think of anyone else right now off the top of my head besides Patty Jenkins or even somebody like a Catherine Bigelow. Mm-hmm. Any one of those people, I think, would be great options. And even Ryan Coogler, looking at the impact that he had on Black Panther mm-hmm. and even films like Creed, I think he's such a brilliant filmmaker. And the fact that he's already heavily involved in Disney, I think speaks to his ability that he could jump ship over to the Star Wars franchise and start there. And Alfonso Cuarón obviously has a great track record, even something like Prisoner of Azkaban and the Harry Potter franchise, which I would say is one of the most favorited movies of that saga. Mm-hmm. So I think either of those guys would be great. And Catherine Bigelow could be a great job at more of like a military movie, possibly with some of her previous work.
Mm-hmm. That's a really insightful call, Brad. I like that. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, one of the things that I love most about, you mentioned Black Panther, and I realize this wasn't only because of how it was written and directed and by whom it was written and directed, but that film does such an incredible job of setting up the mythos and mythology that surrounds that character and Wakanda mm-hmm. that
exactly.
I think we're kind of, there's some part of me that feels like we're kind of overdue to have that reintroduced in the Star Wars galaxy. I feel that it's kind of been dabbled with and certainly boundaries have been pushed here and there. But at the same time, there just seems like that somebody can just really have their finger on that pulse, I think, would make a lot of folks really, really happy with that.
Yeah.
Carl, any final thoughts with this particular story with Benioff and Weiss and where it may go from here?
Well, I just want to say great minds think alike with Brad, because I actually had written an article and listed all those people that he just mentioned. So he and I are on the same wavelength. Mm-hmm. As far as just the Benioff and Weiss, I think it's good that we are going to have opportunity for people who may not, you know, be represented well as far as minorities or women getting in charge. But one thing, and I'll throw it over to the Marvel, you know, Marvel does real well when, like, the writing teams of, like, Martin and McFeely do Captain America movies, and they kind of, they write them all, and they just, they have a where their vision where they're going, and there's, you know, the same voice every time, and they're written well. So I want people who are underrepresented to be able to do that writing, but let's get them there from the start too. I would still rather see the same team or person writing all three movies. I think just based on what we've had with the sequel trilogy, I think one kind of vision and voice helps it all be very, you know, unified as far as what the end product is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's a great way to look at things. And I think that, you know, as we've kind of touched on here and there, although it might not be our initial desire to have this, I don't know, shaky ground is a bit of an overstatement, I'll admit that. But what seems to kind of be this repetitive theme within who's in charge here and who's going to do this and mm-hmm. that and all those things from writing to directing to everything else. I think it's interesting, though. I think that to try to put an optimistic spin on this, it does potentially allow for someone that hasn't had the reins at that level to really step in and make an impact mm-hmm. in doing so. So fingers crossed. We'll obviously track this as it goes. With that, let's continue down the road with our number two story of the week.
Number two.
All right. Listen, I don't know if it's sticking to the rule of two that the Sith introduced us to or not, but it was recently announced that Star Wars Resistance, the animated series, is going to wrap up after only two seasons. We also got in the season two trailer a little glimpse of the Supreme Leader himself, Kylo Ren. Mm. Thought I was going to go with Snoke there for a second, didn't you?
Yes.
Let me first ask this. Eve, let me come to you first. Do you think Kylo Ren going to be enough of a draw to bring new viewers to Star Wars Resistance that aren't already into the Star Wars Resistance groove?
I do think that...
Oh, I see what you did there. You're making fun of me. That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Whatever.
No, I like it. I think for certain people it will be enough. For me, it will not be.
And why not?
I don't know. I'm very specific and choosy, I think, with how much Star Wars content we are getting from movies to TV shows that are upcoming or that have been here. I mean, I still have to get through the last two seasons of Rebels, and I really, really, really enjoy Rebels. Mm. It's just I have to pace myself or I'm going to burn out, and I have this tendency of if I immerse myself so much into this one thing, I eventually end up hating its guts.
Mm.
Because it's too much. I feel inundated and I need a break, and then it's just done for a while. And I don't want that to happen with Star Wars because it means just that little bit more. So I never got into Resistance based on a lot of the reviews that came out, and nothing really blew me away. And of course, you know, I'm going to listen to my friends, and Barb had mentioned that she had tried to watch it with her kids and she couldn't get into it. And that's source enough for me. So I mean, Kylo Ren being there, I don't know. If it ties in with the Rise of Skywalker in any, like, hardcore way, then yes, I will dive in. But otherwise, no.
Does it move the needle at all for you, Eve, if we have a shirtless animated Kylo Ren?
No.
No, not at all? Okay.
That's for me.
I just wanted to...
He's not my type!
What if he's carrying a billy goat?
Oh, man. Now we're talking. And he's got the legs of a steer. He's a Taurus. This is wonderful. Barb, you just got thrown underneath the bus by your very good friend Eve. With that in mind, what's the deal? Why is it that you personally don't feel like you can really get into Resistance?
It's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is, but I think it's a mix between such a love for Rebels, such a non-love for the animation style that Resistance is.
Interesting. Okay.
And as the article did say, it is geared more to the younger audience, where Rebels was able to do both a lot better, seemed.
Mm.
And yeah, I mean, I started to try to watch Resistance with my kids and just could not get into it. I was falling asleep. And I feel like a lot of it has to do, you know, the article posed some questions, you know, was it not gripping enough? Was it not this? And I really started to think about it. Rebels tackled this time period that was ingrained in Star Wars fandom for the last 35 years.
Mm.
That was what Star Wars was. Mm-hmm. This rebellion, this time period where they could pull in the characters that we loved in episodes here and there.
Right.
It just really tackled that background that was the love that every Star Wars fan has. Resistance mm-hmm. is dealing with a time period and characters that are just much more fresh in the fandom, and people haven't been able to grow this history with them and deep love. And I'm not saying, like, I love BB-8. I love Poe Dameron. But the main character, Kaz, I just could not get into. Mm. And it just didn't have as much history as Rebels did. And then the Rebels animation style and then some of the topics it dealt with were really compelling mm. for adults as well as interesting to kids. And Resistance, I don't think it spanned the gap of really being interesting to the adult crowd that loves Star Wars.
Interesting. So let me follow up with this, though. You mentioned that you're watching with your kids. Did your kids find it appealing at all?
They liked it, but they weren't begging to watch more.
Whereas with Rebels, they were?
Oh, Rebels. Yeah, my middle, Leah, she absolutely loves Rebels okay. and always wants to watch more. And even my youngest, Hagen, who's not even six yet, she always wants to watch the last few episodes, like World Between Worlds.
Yeah.
And a few of the other ones that the names yeah. are escaping me. But those end ones, she loves them.
Wow. Okay, so that's interesting, though. I know a lot of folks that grew up late 80s, early 90s were actually like big fans of the style of animation, which has kind of got that anime mm-hmm. flair to it. Brad, from your perspective, where do you land on this as far as Resistance itself being appealing for, quote unquote, the adult audience?
My mind immediately jumps to the infamous line from the Star Wars trailer. Every generation has a legend or whatever, however it goes. And I like to think every generation has its Star Wars. So I definitely think this show in particular is geared more towards children. I for one really do like Resistance a ton. It just speaks to me on a level, I think probably because of how I grew up with cartoons and mm-hmm. how much of that I, you know, was inundated with at a young age. I think it has the ability to appeal to all audiences, though. I think a lot of people do tend to sleep on this show, and it definitely doesn't help with such a different animation style than what we might be used to, and also the time slot on a Sunday night at 10 p.m. It's not generally when a lot of people are going to be watching cartoons, but I think it does have that appeal, at least for me. But I could see where it maybe was not getting the sort of traction that hopefully Lucasfilm wanted from it.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting time slot, right? If it's truly geared towards kids. I mean, kids, sneak out of bed after your parents are asleep. And while you're at it, grab their credit card and dial. Carl?
Yeah.
I'm just going to ask this in mm-hmm. the only way I really know how.
Yeah.
Legitimate points from our panel members or just whiny non-original trilogy fans that aren't grateful for what they have?
Not only that, they are not true fans because they were not alive when Star Wars started. So their opinions on Star Wars, and I don't even know why we listen to this at all. Their opinions are moot. You have to have been alive for the whole thing to have absorbed it in through osmosis.
Damn.
In the society.
Yes, yes.
No,
yes.
No.
Carl's just letting it out tonight.
I'm shook.
No, I agree with their – I can see their points. I agree with Brad. I really enjoyed Resistance, and I think Barb had a good point. And the way I would almost phrase it is you're comparing the first season of Resistance to Rebels as a whole. If – I mean, honestly, if you took Rebels season one and compared it to Resistance season one and hadn't seen any more – of Rebels, I think you would think Resistance is better. You know, people keep saying it's aimed Rebels or Resistance is aimed at younger children. I think that the Rebels had a lot more just sort of silly aimed at real young children episodes in there that we kind of called filler and the producers of the show said there was never any filler. But Resistance, I think the story moved, you know, sequentially. As every episode, everyone built on the last one. There wasn't just one that was just kind of off on its own. So I think Resistance has done a better job as far as its first season. So I thought, basing how much I did think, okay, my higher points have come from Rebels, from the completion of that series, and, you know, the Clone Wars too. Throw that in there. You know, Clone Wars went 6-7 seasons, and they're going to bring another one back on Disney+. There are higher points there. because of the length of it and the depth of it and how much is out there. But because of that track record, I was expecting Resistance to hit that too. If you saw kind of the last two episodes of the first season of Resistance and you see Kaz see Hazi and Prime be destroyed, and that's the planet he's from, I mean, it really kind of hits you too. So I thought its first season was better than Rebels, so I thought it would be. I'm actually disappointed that it is not going any further than just two seasons. I think anything, if you think about your favorite TV show, anything you've ever liked, the first season is, if you go back and watch it, it's usually kind of slow because they're just setting all the characters up and they're building these relationships and they kind of do things that you don't think about. And then all of a sudden it comes back in the second season, something from one episode here and there. And all of a sudden it's built into this big, you know, lore of the whole show. And I think every show has to go through that. And unfortunately, Resistance, I guess, just didn't get enough traction in its first season to carry on any further.
Well, I want to come back to that piece of the puzzle, but before I do, there's an angry Canadian that was, and by angry Canadian, I meant that she had one eyebrow that was raised. as you were talking, Carl, Barb was, she was throwing bad vibes your way. So, Barb.
I felt it.
What? Yeah, right. So.
I disagree with Carl for once.
Whoa.
I know. It's
oh,
shocking.
Oh, my goodness. Southern hospitality versus Canadian politeness. Who will win?
I mean, you know, when I pull back a little bit, I think it has a lot to do with my own perspectives of what I like and what I don't. But I could compare season one of Rebels alone with season one of Resistance and still think Rebels is way better. And, I mean, even from the very first episode of Rebels, you've got some really deep stuff happening that I didn't see in the first three episodes of Resistance. And yeah, I really love Rebels. And I think that season one, season two, season three, season four, they all can stand alone and in comparison to Resistance. But I mean, that doesn't mean that you can't like Resistance. Yeah.
No, I'll change my mind. You got me. No, it's all personal opinion. And
it is personal opinion, but you just got this, like, to me, this epic moment that grabbed me in episode one of season one of Rebels is Kanan revealing that he's a Jedi and just knowing where that's going to go. And, you know, I didn't get that from Resistance. If you did, that's great. Show me or tell me where you got that. I can't compare the two.
I will say that season one versus season one, and I'm not even saying that one, that's the right thing to do is compare these two completely different shows in so many ways against one another. But it was interesting, and you touched on this kind of in your first response, Barb, and that was it was with a time period that we already had familiarity with. And I think that like whenever you're pushing the nostalgia button, that's going to bring a lot of people in. Carl, I want to come back to you, though. When it comes to this series wrapping up after two seasons, do you think it has more to do with ratings, or do you think this is more like the story's told?
I would probably say ratings. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I think anybody that's a fan of a show, and again, think about your favorite shows. You know, usually to me, five seasons is a good run of a show, and then after five, it might still be good, but it's kind of a, you know, a shadow of his former self. And sometimes right around season three is when you start seeing it hit its stride, because it's laid so much groundwork that when they start going and pulling back things that you thought stood by themselves, but then they connect them again, then you start seeing how big this world is, how much they've thought about it and how much they've written well. So to me, I would say three seasons at least, and I think five is a good number for me personally of just my experience with watching television shows.
Well, as someone who just wrapped up season three of The Handmaid's Tale, having his mind completely blown, there's something to your theory, I think. I don't know if that's the magic number or not, but yeah.
It's the magic
number. Brad, did you want to jump in?
Yeah, I think to add to that, too, I think it's definitely, you have to admit it's probably partly ratings as well, but I do think Disney, who's probably not, you know, strapped for cash right now, I do think they're probably looking at what kinds of projects they want to put their focus into. So, you know, thinking about Resistance, it's probably not going to be a Resistance once the First Order is defeated. It's going to be more of a Republic. So, you know, there is the possibility for some of these characters maybe to come back in some fashion in a new TV show, maybe not exactly centered on them, but involved in the Star Wars universe post Rise of Skywalker. But I do think Lucasfilm's trying to pivot a little bit towards, one, getting all their stuff on Disney Plus and off of Disney Channel or Disney XD, and also just trying to tell stories that either fans have been craving for a while, or just newer stories that would completely surprise us.
I got a question about that, because that was in the article too, a little bit alluding to something like that. I guess I don't quite understand why. I mean, Disney still needs content for its cable television show. I mean, its network, I guess, and not just Disney Plus, I guess. So I don't are you saying it's Lucasfilm itself that just wants to be totally on Disney Plus? And I guess the question is why wouldn't it want to be in as many different places as possible for people who don't have Disney Plus, or for people who don't necessarily have cable subscriptions anymore, to be kind of diversified, be sure that you're reaching as big an audience as possible. So I didn't really understand why, we want to try to get everything on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm. I think it's less to do with Lucasfilm itself making the decision. It's probably coming from the top, from Iger and his crew. But I think what they're really trying to do is just drive as much business as possible, because when you think about it, Disney Plus isn't that expensive. It's only about a $7 price point, which, I mean, Netflix right now is at $13 or $15. So it's a pretty easy ask when you're putting all of your original content on one platform and saying, going up against something like a Netflix, to say, here's what we got, it's all under the Disney umbrella with Marvel and Star Wars. It's a pretty easy sell, considering those are probably the two biggest intellectual properties out there right now. So I think it's just plainly a business move.
I think it brings up some other questions, and Eve, let me kind of toss this in your direction. And that is this: when it comes to whether it's live action, whether it's animated, whatever, felt board and pieces of felt, whatever they're going to do that's going to bring us a Star Wars story. There was so much grumbling by a fairly large part of fandom when Disney pushed the reset button and declared, here's what's canon, and everything else is just this kind of expanded universe, right? The myth out there, the legends. Do you think that there's actually a place to create some, quote-unquote, kids animated series or kids live-action series that aren't necessarily, quote-unquote, canon?
Do I think there's a space or room? Absolutely. I mean, as we've seen over the last few years, a lot of the things that were kind of tossed out and thrown away have become canon. Certain, like Thrawn, for example. I mean, how many books does he have now? Three? And he was on Rebels. There's so many things that Disney is just starting to pick and choose and pull from. So I absolutely could see room on, the cable network shows that are not going to be moved to Disney Plus for them to do that. But again, it's Star Wars, and I just think that they are going to milk it for all it's worth. So they're going to put their Star Wars content on Disney Plus.
Which yeah, go ahead.
Kind of sucks. It kind of sucks a little bit for people who, might not be able to run out and immediately just get a subscription to it. And then, they're diehard Star Wars fans, and they have to wait and wait and wait, or hope, they find someone who lends out their login, which...
Yes, say more.
At Skywalker _E.
Let me write that down.
There's definitely room for it. I just think from a lucrative bottom line standpoint, I don't know if it's going to be on the existing channels we have right now.
Well, I think another interesting kind of nook and cranny to this too, and Barb, let me kind of bring you back into the fold. One of the things that some folks have said is not really hitting all the right buttons with Galaxy's Edge, Star Wars Land, if you will, is that there's not any legacy characters there. So I'm curious, when we see, whether it's an animated series or a live action series that we don't yet have but will have, if it's there and gone, will we actually be able to kind of build an affinity for these characters? We're like, oh, I want to stand in line for 80 minutes to get my picture taken with whatever character it might be.
So you're asking if these new shows with new characters can build that love that we have with the legacy characters?
Yes, and can they do it in only two seasons? Do we need, I need 4 or 5, like Carl said, minimum of 3 seasons maybe before I can go like, oh, I think actually I'd want to go stand in line to get my picture taken with Kaz.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be a fan base. There is. I've been on Twitter. I've seen lots of people that absolutely love Resistance.
Yes.
And so in that way, I think that they definitely can have those characters, you know, if you're going to Galaxy's Edge, those characters that people are going to want to go see. But then you've got the casual Star Wars fan that's going to Galaxy's Edge and excited about Galaxy's Edge, but would see Kaz walk by and have no idea who he is.
Yeah.
So it's not like going to a Star Wars celebration where everybody knows everybody's name and everybody's backstory pretty much.
Right.
It's Galaxy's Edge, and you get every fan, you know, from the one who will go see it once in theaters and not again. I don't understand those people, but to the fans like us, and even more so.
Right.
So I think that there is a place for those characters to really build that affinity. It's just not going to be in every Star Wars fan.
Mm. I think I would mostly agree with that. I think that, right, this is interesting. If we look at it from a shareholder standpoint, if we look at it from Bob Iger's standpoint or Kathleen Kennedy's standpoint, it's an interesting kind of shell game, right? Like just to find that right combination that's going to not only be a quote-unquote rewarding fan experience, but it's also going to be a rewarding shareholder experience, right? And I think that I don't envy that position.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that's left to somebody else to make those decisions.
Yes.
Yes. With that being said, let's go to our number one news story of the week.
Number one.
Well, hello there. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you've all been waiting for, or at least a good chunk of you, it has been unofficially announced that Ewan McGregor is going to be reprising his role as that desert-dwelling Jedi Knight in the Dune Sea, and we're perhaps, maybe, sort of, kind of, fingers crossed, going to get an Obi-Wan live-action streaming series on Disney Plus. Here's the asterisk. Even though that's been released and announced by major trade publications such as Hollywood Reporter, such as Variety, on and on, to no one's surprise, the Mouse House has not said a word. Now, we also know, however, that D3 is happening this coming weekend as we're recording this, and there's probably a pretty good chance that if something's said, it might be said, confirmed, at D23 in Anaheim this weekend. Okay. With that being said, Brad, let me kind of just toss this your way to get this conversation going with the 99.9% possibility that this is actually happening. Are we excited for this still? Is this at this point a slow clap? Where are you at on this?
Well, I can tell you one thing. As soon as Lucasfilm got Ewan McGregor into that room to put pen to paper, the negotiations were short. And, I mean, he's been...
And aggressive.
Every time he talks about Star Wars, he still loves it. Every interview I see of him, I saw one on the one of the BBC shows, and he was, you know, showing off his lightsaber skills, and you could just see it was like he was a kid again almost. So he's excited to be back into it if it is the case, and I think for the fandom in general as well. You know, anybody that might have felt like they're missing some of those legacy characters, you know, this is something that I'm hoping everybody can unite around because. You know, for me at least, Ewan McGregor's performance was one of the shining parts of the prequel trilogy. But I think there's still so much story to tell for him in those off years between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, because it's, you know, the Ben that we meet in the Dune Sea is much different than the Ben that we leave off with at the end of Revenge of the Sith. So there's a lot there, and I think there's also a lot of great ways that we can incorporate some old memories as well with the show.
Well said, and I'm with you on that. Eve, from your perspective, I want to throw partially the same question your way. Is this great? Is this kind of finally giving fans the high five that we've been after since 2012? Or is this like, dear Lord, let's get them off our backs and just give them the damn Obi-Wan live action?
I'm leaning more towards the high five that a lot of the fans have wanted for a while. And yeah, I think this is absolutely great. I think it's It feels like the most inevitable thing right now when all of these, and you and I were texting about it, and I was like, I'm like 60-40 there.
Right,
right. And then you sent the Hollywood Reporter article, and I was like, okay, I'm like 80-20 believing. Because it's all about the sources and who's saying what, because there's just so much out there that's BS. Mm. But this feels real. Like, I feel like, you know, next weekend at D23, we're going to get this, you know, just Ewan McGregor walking out on stage doing his lightsaber moves and talking about Kylo Ren's hilt, like, which is what he loves to do. And I'm so excited for that. And I hope it happens, but I'm still, you know, I need Disney to say it.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah, there's something but, about the actual confirmation. Go ahead.
Yes, no, I will say that it's a selfish motivation because if we get that time period between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, then we're going to have some Vader.
Well, we'll come back to that. So put a little bit of a bookmark there. We'll come back to that. Carl, will you join me in please giving Lucasfilm a very slow clap on this? Are you with me when it's just like, the luster's lost? I, now that people are getting excited about it, I just kind of want to go, I refuse to be part of the madness of the stream of optimism.
I'm sorry I can't join you on that one, Devin. I mean, I know we're true real fans, but I mean...
thought we were real friends, too.
We used to be, I think. But, you know... no, I'm actually, it makes sense. Cause I think, you know, I think there was a, to me, kind of a sense of loss or underutilization when you had, Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill in their prime and you really didn't do anything else with them. And people were begging for it. And then by the time we get to the sequel trilogies, you know, we bring them in, but it's a little too late. And so the only person you can really do that with that kind of draws in both the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy is Obi-Wan. You know, as Brad said, that's the character that even if people were down on the prequels, they really enjoyed Ewan McGregor's performance and probably because they liked the character. And if they were from that original generation, that's probably why. It's like, well, we know Obi-Wan, we know who he is, and he's you know steady and rock. You know, that's something you can build on. So. I think they maybe have learned a lesson of, well, we got to strike while the iron's hot because I think there's so much stuff that has gone by that I don't know why they held on to for so long and not let people touch it or do anything with it, but then there was just nothing there. So do it while you can. Ewan McGregor's still a young enough man to portray him in that same time period, and it's a character that unites a lot of the fan base. So I think it's a great idea.
It's interesting. Let me just kind of pull out one of the things you said there. It almost sounds like when you said like strike while the iron's hot, though, do you feel that this is a reactionary move on the part of Lucasfilm, or do you think that this was part of the bigger picture all along?
No, I think it's part of the bigger picture. I think they've learned the lesson of not letting things slip away. And then when you do something, it already being too, you know, it's too late to do anything with it that you wanted to do. So they're not reaction. I don't think to the, audience clamoring for it, because I think they probably would have done it first instead of having Mandalorian and Cassian Andor. I mean, I think they're kind of trying to encapsulate everybody. The Mandalorian is it's its own thing. It doesn't really have somebody a group following yet. Cassian Andor is for the newer fans. Maybe it's a character that was in you know in Rogue One, but it's part of the Disney movies. And now we're kind of going back and now we're going to attract original and prequel trilogy lovers to this as well. So I think they're just kind of spreading the net wide to try to make everybody happy.
All right. I'll buy a little bit of that. Barb, we've seen with Star Wars Rebels, certainly with Marvel's Star Wars line, we've had Obi-Wan come up in various storylines, right? We haven't been Obi-Wan free under the Disney umbrella by any stretch of the imagination. There are probably a few roles that guy, Obi-Wan, kind of fulfilled while he was on Tatooine, or at least during that time period. We don't know if he was on Tatooine the entire time yet. What are some situations or roles that you would want to see Obi-Wan deal with if indeed we get this live action like most everyone is saying we will?
Wow. So I don't think he stayed on Tatooine. Okay. It's a long time period that he could go off planet for a lot of good reasons and do things, but he'll still have to do it under the cover of not being a Jedi. I think, again, I am not the creative writers behind this, thank goodness, but I know that they can come up with some really compelling stories that fill in that gap between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. And I mean, I've been waiting for this, and I am super excited for this. So I'm sure it's going to be great. Bringing, you know, you said that we haven't been Obi-Wan free with Disney, but we have been Ewan McGregor free, and we need Ewan McGregor to reprise his role as Obi-Wan and just take off with it, because it's going to be amazing.
We need him.
Yes.
Yes. Help us, Ewan. You're our only hope. Brad, I'm curious, do you think that this is going to be something that most, because all of fandom will never be on the same page about anything, but do you think this will actually, will this be a salve on fandom? Will this be a uniting thing that brings normally arguing Reylo shippers and haters together as one?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely, like I said before, I think it can be something we all unite around, but I also think it's important to take a step back and remember the progress that Lucasfilm has made in a lot of their stories. And I think it's important not just to cater to maybe potentially one group of people that maybe dislike the sequel trilogy and maybe go back to those legacy characters to satisfy them. I think they still need to you know, keep everything diverse as well. I think depending on who is going to be headlining this project, I think is just as important as the fact that it's happening. So I'd like to see who's involved with it. And I also think it's important to really just stay true to the character. And also just, I think we'll get a lot of fan service also, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but like I said, I think that will kind of be the uniting force. You know, if we do get a character like Vader, or even if they bring back the guy who played Owen Lars and the girl played Aunt Beru in the prequel trilogy, like those kinds of people back into the fold. So you can really make it one sort of callback to what a lot of people are familiar with and what we all can really, really love together. And I think that's something that we might need right now as we go into this new period of time where we're not going to have Star Wars for quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, we have to see at some point, right? And Eve, I want to kind of toss this in your direction. We've got to see at some point why Joel Edgerton's Uncle Owen is eventually calls him a crazy old wizard, right? I mean, is he working the birthday party circuit on Tatooine, or what does that look like?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a story there. Something went down between those two. And, you know, we leave off in Revenge of the Sith with him saying, hey, thanks for the kid. Gonna go watch the sunset for a while for some reason right now. But, I mean, like, what happens? Like, why is he such a controversial character that he doesn't want Luke going after him?
So, even so, those damn
idealistic crusades, you know? So, what is one of those crusades that Owen is referring to? Yeah, I could even see Obi-Wan bringing Owen on a crusade and doing some sort of adventure to protect Luke. And that's where Owen realizes it's just too much for him. Don't get involved anymore.
Ooh, I like that.
I like that. Eve, let me kind of bring it over to you. You mentioned Vader at the top of this news story. Is bringing Vader into this, one, is it necessary? Is it good for the story that we get Vader and Obi-Wan? Or is this something that, like, that might be pushing the envelope a little bit? Might be a little too much fan service.
I know people who would outright say that it's fan service. I am not one of them. I think just the evolution of the relationship and the breakdown between Anakin and Obi-Wan is enough to have him trickled throughout an Obi-Wan series in some way. I mean, it just, like, if I were to put myself in Obi-Wan's shoes and have suffered such a great loss in someone who meant so much to me and that I physically harmed so horribly, that would be enough for me to just change on almost a molecular level as a human being. And then to isolate myself on a planet in the middle of nowhere and to be alone, I just the opportunity of hearing about Vader, or, you know, over the HoloNet, can you imagine? Like, you would just be instantly pulled into any news that revolved around that person because of your connection and your link to them. You know, on the flip side of that, it would could turn into this unhealthy kind of lifestyle, and then he might have to push back at it. In either case, he has to factor in somehow.
I'm with that. I also want to go back to how we've sometimes, or how I have sometimes referred to Vader as being most effective, and that is similar to how Steven Spielberg used Jaws in the original Jaws. When it's this looming threat that's not always visibly present, sometimes that is much more effective than the actual character that's there that you can fully see with your eyes and experience visually. I'm curious, though, you know, in addition to Vader, we also have this run-in, if you will, with Maul, both in the Clone Wars and in Star Wars Rebels. We may or may not see anything live action with that, but here's what I'd love to know, Barb, from you. Do you think that we see other characters from Rebels that we've only known through animation make a live action appearance?
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that, but that would be really cool because we've seen the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the live action show up in the animated series.
Right.
To see Kanan or Ezra, you know, any of those characters show up. Oh, that would be incredible.
Well, and I wonder, you know, among those, Sabine, right? And then we've got the Mandalorian coming up. And it'll just be interesting to see, Carl, you kind of touched on this before, how, you know, maybe need 3 or 4 years of a series to understand what happened in season one. You may have to wait till season 3 or 4 beyond. I'm curious to know if at all we see any of those characters in this Obi-Wan series, and we see how it connects to the Mandalorian series that is not running side by side with this. So
oh, that would be good.
I'm intrigued to see just how deep Disney's willing to go with this crossover and this connective tissue, if you will. Let me throw a couple of ideas at you, Carl, and tell me if you would see this as something that would be compelling in an Obi-Wan series. Would you want to see Obi-Wan learning how to be a Force ghost?
No.
So you don't want that communion with Qui-Gon?
I mean, a little bit. Maybe, you know, you enter a scene, somebody enters a room and he's talking to somebody, but I don't want it to be like the main focus or like, an in-depth scene like that.
Okay. Brad, you mentioned earlier as far as the Lars family. Do we bring back Bonnie Peace and Joel Edgerton for this?
Absolutely. Yep. I think just for connectivity and in continuity, I think that's the right move. And it'll just be a great homage to Revenge of the Sith.
I want that back because Bonnie Peace was our first interview. And I want to read you because I was so nervous when I talked to her. Do-over. Eve, how about this? Do we actually see Obi-Wan not just leave Tatooine, but do we see him actually actively involved in aiding the rebellion?
I would say if we do, it would be in the first decade after Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
I think the Obi-Wan that we meet in the desert in A New Hope has not fought for a long, long time. I just think that he's just developed that almost like what we saw of Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi. This isolation, kind of hovering, watching Luke from a distance, but that's his role. Mm. But maybe in the 5 to 10 years or so after the Revenge of the Sith, maybe in some capacity, just like that silent aid, enough to where Leia knows who he is, and that's the Jedi we need right now. Mm. Please come out of retirement and save our ass.
Now, that brings up some interesting questions. Do we have an appearance with Leia or Bail Organa? That would be fascinating to me, and maybe even Yoda for that matter. Barb, your thoughts?
It's hard to say because I keep thinking back to exactly what the words are of Leia when she's asking Obi-Wan for hope. And I think it's something along the lines of, years ago, you helped my father in the Clone Wars.
True.
And so, you know, to be consistent and not break out of that, would, because Obi-Wan also says he hasn't heard his name since before Luke was born. The name Obi-Wan.
Right.
So it's just, it's hard to say in what capacity Obi-Wan would have helped the rebellion after Revenge of the Sith, mm-hmm. especially in regards to Bail Organa specifically.
Yeah.
Because Leia is pulling from what she knows that her father has told her.
Yeah. I would think.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brad, jump in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to add to that a little bit. Yeah. I think it's important to look at the Rogue One dialogue between Bail Organa and Mon Mothma.
Yes.
Because Mon Mothma says, "Your friend, the Jedi." And Bail Organa says, "He served me well during the Clone Wars and has lived in hiding since the Emperor's Purge. Yes, I will send for him." Mm-hmm. So to me, that indicates at least Obi-Wan probably hasn't helped them anytime recently, because I would feel like Mon Mothma would be like, you know, your friend Obi-Wan,
right,
not just
right.
like the Jedi. But I think that indicates that he has been in hiding ever since and hasn't been involved at all. But I think it also gives credence to maybe we will see, you know, Jimmy Smits come back for a role reprising Bail Organa, maybe even just like, you know, contacting Obi-Wan here and there occasionally just to check in with them.
Yeah, and I would love to see that, and I think that's probably the extent of what I would want to see. I don't need to necessarily see them plotting and getting together for drinks and reminiscing on glory days. It would be interesting to bring some of those characters back, though. I'm curious, Carl, is this a place where we might actually see some, you know, at one point it was reported that the actress that plays Jyn Erso actually had signed for more than one film. Do you think that we might even see some crossover with Rogue One characters? We know that we're going to get a Cassian Andor series.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we should. It's something that if, cause I mean, I just pray that they get off that planet more than just, you know, once or twice. I would like to see as little of Tatooine as possible, because it seems like we're going to be on there for The Mandalorian anyway. And I think it would get kind of old seeing desert all the time. Mm. So I would hope he would maybe have some information for some of the you know, the secret operatives, the spies for the rebels. And so maybe that way he would maybe cross paths with, if not Cassian Andor, his superiors or something like that. You know, he was on Tatooine for a while, so that can't be helped. But, you know, he, with all that Jabba does, he might be able to sort of see what, you know, plans that Jabba has that might interfere or, you know, threaten Luke or threaten some things the rebels are doing or draw Imperial attention to that place. And so he might also sort of try to sabotage some things that is going on with the Hutts too. So, I would like to see some overlap, though, with Rogue One characters, sure.
I've brought this up on the pod before, but it's been a good long while. I couldn't even tell you the last time I talked about it. If you haven't already, throw this into your search engine of choice, and that is Silent Guardian Raymond Swanland.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the most epic pieces of art that I have seen, and it's elusive. I haven't been able to actually add it to my collection here, but it is an incredible rendition of the Alec Guinness Obi-Wan, kind of in the shadows of Beggar's Canyon, protecting Luke. Luke's flying in his T-16 Skyhopper, and Obi-Wan is there slaying the Tuskens in order to protect a young Skywalker. And it is just so well done, and it just is so evocative of so many incredible things that we may eventually get. I'm excited for this. Let's hope that D23 this weekend is the big announcement. I might go from a slow clap to a shoulder shrug. Cool. Sounds good. Go, Ewan. With that, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with our closer look for the week.
I'm going in closer to one of the big ones.
Closer?
Come closer, I have good news.
A certain point of view.
Same thing I always do, talk my way out of it.
The ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
I never ask that question until after I've done it.
You're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
It's true, Ben. This seems like a Ben Kenobi-centric episode for no reason in particular. It wasn't planned that way. Okay, here's our situation. A while ago, an article came out, and part of it just kind of grabbed hold to a couple of quotes that were said in another interview from Ben Morris, who was the Last Jedi visual effects supervisor. And here's one of the things that he said in the interview, and I'm quoting right now. We, meaning Lucasfilm, we will always digitally scan all the lead actors in the film. We don't know if we're going to need them. We don't intentionally scan them as an archive process. It's for reference later. That is somewhat mysterious. It could mean we're just keeping it around just in case. It could mean actually we might do something with this. Of course, in Rogue One, we had the digital rebirth of Grand Moff Tarkin, as well as Carrie Fisher's Princess Leia circa 1977. We've already been told that we're not going to get that treatment in The Rise of Skywalker when it comes to Leia's character. But listen, it's no surprise. We're not breaking any news here that things are going to a very digital content world. From books, of course, to films. How many films of the recent past have starred, quote-unquote, CGI characters? So the question kind of begs itself is, do we see this use of these scanned actors for digital versions of Star Wars storytelling? We can save kind of, is this the ethical and right thing to do for later in our discussion? But right now, I just want to know your initial reaction. If, as an example, we said, you know, has nothing to do with Alden Ehrenreich, but you know what? We're going to digitally create this Han Solo film, and we're going to use a young Han Solo as the Harrison Ford, not the Alden Ehrenreich. Does that make a difference to move the needle when it comes to fandom's response? By the way, I'm on the record. Loved Alden Ehrenreich. Loved the Solo film. Mm-hmm. All right. That being said, Eve, I'm tossing it your way first. Here's the live grenade that you've been waiting to pounce on. All of these scanned archives. We literally have actor after actor after actor scanned. We have the presumably the original trilogy cast scanned from various points of their own life. Should this be used to actually bring us some super creative storytelling that we otherwise wouldn't have if not for this digital medium?
Should it? I'm going to focus on that. You know what? It just creeps me out. That's kind of, it doesn't, there's that, I can't remember the term for it. We've used it on the show before,
but the uncanny valley.
Yes. That dead eye. There is no soul in that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing there behind the eyes. It's so absolutely obvious that if they went back and they were like, you know what? We have another story to tell after Return of the Jedi, and we're going to use Carrie, Mark, and Harrison, and it's going to be a full-length feature film, but everybody's going to be fake. I would be disturbed from start to finish, because no matter how real and how lifelike that ultimately would be because of the fantastic technology that exists today, it would not. That uncanny valley would still be there, and it's like Jurassic Park. They didn't stop to ask if they should.
That's
kind of how I feel about that.
Okay. Well, and listen, that's obviously plays into the ethical side of things. Is the right thing to do? Do you have the estate or the family's permission or that person's permission if they're still alive? Now, and granted, when the Leia in Rogue One was done, Carrie Fisher gave her blessing. And when she saw it, she was absolutely just fell in love with it. So... Mm-hmm. To each their own, I guess. Certainly, there's the uncanny valley, which if you're unfamiliar with that, Eve touched on that, and that is we can see this digitally created character, but the eyes are kind of the window to the soul, as it says, right? We can tell that something's just amiss. Now, what's interesting about that, there was a lot of people that didn't know that Tarkin was a CGI character. Well, now, listen, we talked about fans that go to Celebration and just your quote-unquote... I'm using quote-unquote a lot tonight. Just your quote-unquote average fan. And I think a lot of people just saw Star Wars Rogue One, and they went to see it not knowing necessarily like how this character was brought into this film for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So that being said, Barb, are you on board with this? Or are you on board with the furthering adventures of Luke Skywalker circa 1983 to 85-ish?
This topic brings in such a gray area. But I am not on board with this.
Really?
I don't like the idea, especially when it comes to characters that are played by actors that have since passed.
Yeah. You're talking about doing like full motion cap and stuff like that.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like Peter Cummings is the actor who did Tarkin.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on to say, you know, they had his whole family's approval and they got the whatever.
Yeah.
And that's good. That's good. But it was creepy. When I watch Rogue One, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, it's well done. Yeah. It's very well done.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, he's dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and they're taking me out of the movie at that moment.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because of the Uncanny Valley or just because you had this foreknowledge of going, I know that. Peter Cushing died a long time ago.
See, I said it wrong. I knew I said his name wrong.
No, Peter Cushing was the original.
Peter Cushing.
Was the original.
I know, but I said his name
you
wrong.
You said
yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I was, yeah.
That's okay.
I knew it as That's I said okay. it. But That's anyways, okay. see, there I've gone and messed up somebody who's deceased. But anyways.
Next week on The Haunting of Peter Cushing. Father Barb is she can't sleep at night. Because,
So it's just, it's hard because... there's going to be a difference of opinion. And that's what I mean by there's this gray area.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I don't think that it should be done.
Okay.
And, you know, I think Alden Ehrenreich did a great job as Han Solo.
Yeah.
And we can continue to have stories that hit the nail on the head with other actors portraying them. But, you know, it's hard to say because when Carrie Fisher died, there was no other person that I wanted to portray Leia. Mm. None whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, but at the same time, I didn't want them to use CGI.
Mm.
So it's just, it's so hard to talk about this subject, especially, like I said, when we're talking about actors that have since passed.
Yeah. So for you, it has more to do with the ethical side than whether it's believable on screen.
Yes, and it makes it less believable because it's pulling me out of the moment.
Okay, now I find this fascinating. And Carl, I want to kind of bring it your way with this. I found this piece fascinating because we can believe that there's such a thing called lightsabers. We can believe in hyperspace. We can believe in Max Rebo and Ula and Rancors and all this. But we draw the line with mocap of dead actors. Carl, where are you on this? Is this something that you can suspend belief? Is it just one more thing that you can suspend belief on for a 2-hour runtime and enjoy a Star Wars story that we wouldn't otherwise have?
Yeah, I mean, I can suspend disbelief. And on Rogue One, I've kind of gone back and forth depending on, I guess, the size of screen that I saw it on. I mean, Tarkin, I thought they did a really good job with it. Yes, I still knew he wasn't really him, but he looked a lot better than Jar Jar Binks and things from the prequels. Mm. So it was great for that one character at that one time. I enjoyed it. Then Leia looked, she didn't look good at the end. Then I've seen it again, like on like a regular television. Then he didn't look as good and she did. So depending on the screen, sometimes one looks better than the other, but I can still suspend disbelief and just go, yeah, those characters are fine. And it, you know, I know it's not a real, that's not the real person's face that's standing there doing the acting. They've put something, they put the original computer image on that of the original actor. But I think my problem is kind of a little bit different. You know, it's just sometimes you got to let the next generation take it on. Mm. And, you know, if you wanted, I would love to see adventures of Han, Luke, and Leia from that time period, you know, or, you know, after Return of the Jedi or in between the original trilogy movies themselves, like when they're searching for a new base after A New Hope and some of the adventures they may get into. But I would just rather see some new young actors, give them a chance. It's hard to step in those shoes and play those iconic characters, you know, and replace those iconic actors.
But it's, you know, it's time to let the next generation make it their own and have new people do it. You know, and you look at Star Trek, I think Chris Pine did a great job as Captain Kirk. He's, you know, William Shatner is, you know, kind of bigger than life. But, you know, I would rather see Chris Pine do it than them kind of de-age, you know, William Shatner back to the 60s and have a computer generated him run around on the big screen for Star Trek.
Hmm. Brad, agree with Carl or do you agree with the ladies on this one?
I think I gotta agree with Barb and Eve on this one. Part of it's tough because like Carl was mentioning, you could recast some of these characters, but then brings up a whole nother issue as can this person, you know, are people going to believe it, you know, being so different from what we're so attached to traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely don't think ever should Lucasfilm, you know, overlay Alden Ehrenreich's face or anything like that. I'm totally with you, Devin, on I love Solo. I love his performance. So I think we'll never go down that route. But what I really see this as is more of insurance than anything else. Because when you look at when Carrie Fisher passed, they had 3 years ago, oh shit, you know, what do we do now? Mm. This was supposed to be Leia's movie. So they had to really think about what they were going to do, how they could get the blessing of the family, but also tell the story of Leia as they intended. So moving forward, if they try to tell these stories in the future, and you know, maybe they can still bring on Harrison Ford or Mark Hamill to these projects, but what happens if one of them passes midway through? Mm. You know, you're at that point, you can't recast if you're 5 to 6 months into production. So I just see this mostly as insurance. I'm not necessarily sure if they'll do a full live action, you know, retelling of any stories solely based on, again, the Uncanny Valley, but mm-hmm. It'll be a good backup so that they don't have to either stall production on something in the future or, you know, don't have their hands tied anymore.
And I think that that's where things seem to be at right now. This article goes on and has more quotes from Morris, who, again, was the VFX supervisor on The Last Jedi. And he talks about, well, you know, when Leia is sucked out into space, there's parts of that that are CGI and animation. And while she acted part of it, there were parts that were filled in that were partly digital and animated based on the scans that they had taken. He goes on to say that, yeah, could they do an entire, it's not even live action, but it'd be similar to what Disney just gave us with The Lion King, right? It's digital, but it's meant to feel like live action. It's not dissimilar to, I think, what really the heart of so many movies are. We look at Avatar, which is, quite frankly, an avatar, by its most proper name when it comes to that. I get the ethical side of things. I also get the Uncanny Valley. I don't know if that can ever be overcome. I'm not sure I want it to be ever overcome. I think that from an ethical perspective, if the quote unquote live action happens with these scanned actors, I think that needs to be part of the understanding, the agreement between the filmmakers and the audience. I hope I'm not sounding like I'm splitting hairs here, but I think that there is an important difference between saying this is created for your entertainment versus these are the real actors. There's such a thing right now, right? Deep fake videos, which I'm sure that you've heard of them. They're taking politicians and completely changing their words. And that is a very, very dangerous road to go down for a variety of reasons. When it comes to movies, I almost kind of expect something like that. Now, obviously, where we get into, though, right, is we start having voices and how so-and-so would actually act this. And so there's some other subtle nuances there. But I fully confess that I'm at least intrigued by this as a fan, and not just a Star Wars fan, but as a fan of cinema. Barb, you're shaking your head.
Well,
and I want to know why.
Because I think there's a difference when you're using the example of, and the article did this as well, the example of Leia floating through space.
Yeah.
It's a difference when, you know, they're talking about pyrotechnics going on around her, you know,
right.
Safety, using stunt doubles, which has been done, you know, forever in
right.
movies. You know, there's a difference between that mm-hmm. when the actor is portraying themselves. Well, okay. you know, portraying the character, but it's themselves.
Yeah.
And then actually using digital scans of a person's face to go over another actor who's, you know, it, there's a difference there. And yes. That's my point.
That I concur.
No, I'm just saying, like, when it comes to ethics, you can't compare the two, because, you know, if we're to get an entire third movie, which I know we're not, but if we're going to get an entire movie that is digitally scanned of Carrie Fisher portraying Leia,
yes.
It's not the same thing as just using stunt doubles or using CGI for specific things. You know, you use the example of Avatar. You know, that actor was still portraying that character. Mm-hmm. He was still voicing that character, you know, when we saw him before he became the Avatar and things like that. It's just a line that's being crossed that nobody has drawn, but people are going to really start to notice and push back on it. I am. I don't like that idea. I think live action movies should be played by live people. And the more you get into this CGI of people beyond just the special effects of explosions and things like that, it's just crossing that line that I'm not comfortable with.
Mm. I have to confess, like I'm not convinced it's on level of like 1 to 10 being the most ethically unpure thing in the history of history.
I'm not saying it's ethically unpure. I'm saying that it's, you know, there's that gray area, but it's just this line. And like I said, it's almost that line of if you're going to do it with people that are deceased.
Yeah.
You know, when we first saw the end of Rogue One, Carrie Fisher was still alive.
Sure.
So it didn't affect me as much as seeing Peter Cushing. Let me get it right this time.
Yeah.
You know, but now that Carrie Fisher is gone, it's going to have a weirder feeling than it did in the end of Rogue One.
Yes, but I think part of that is the timing of her death, right? I think mm-hmm. that if we, 15 years from now, let's pretend that every actor from the original trilogy, from the core crew to the woman that played one of the Cantina aliens, right? Everybody's gone, right? For whatever reason, gone, vanished. If Lucasfilm were to come and say, hey, we have a brand new set of Star Wars stories to tell you using these digital characters, and they explain to you the process, here's what we did. Oh, when we had these actors here, we digitally scanned them and we archived them. And now we're going, because we're at a spot with technology, we can now tell the continuing adventures of, name your Star Wars character here.
And that's not creepy to you?
It's not.
Because, okay, take it from a personal level.
Yeah.
Take it from, you know, a child of these actors.
Sure.
And they're watching, you know, their family member being brought back to life.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
I honestly don't see that.
Huh.
Like, I understand, like, some people might react like that. I'm not saying that it's one size fits all. But if you were going to tell me, like, hey, Devin, we found your Christmas of 1991 family movie so compelling. we're going to CGI your now deceased father, and we'll allow you to voice you as your character, but we're going to have somebody else be CGI'd. I'd be like, cool, let's do it.
Really?
Yeah, like that doesn't bother me.
Like, because I was going to say that it's because you're personally separated from these actors, but you're saying that even with somebody that you knew, it wouldn't bother you.
No, my dad was my absolute hero. I get a kick out of him. It's like, boom, there's Big Roy.
Wow.
Yeah, truly.
I mean, I think that's just showing a big difference between, you know, people
right
out
and wrong.
There.
I know, but I love you anyway.
you know what, Devin? Yeah, it really does come down to, you know, what affects people on different levels.
Yeah.
And some people can just completely separate themselves from that and enjoy it. And I mean, I'm not saying that I couldn't, but it does take me out of the movie.
Yeah,
it takes me out of the moment.
If I'm going into a movie theater and I'm not going to watch something like Schindler's List, right? If I'm going into a movie theater for entertainment value, it doesn't make a difference to me. Like, again, assuming like the family of the state's like, sure, like bring dad back to life, right? I'd be like, I'm going here to be entertained. Tell me a good story, right? Mm. So we do it in similar ways when we digitize historic figures to tell their tale, their piece in history. So why would the actors in Star Wars be different?
Oh, I'm going to jump.
Yeah,
Eve, jump in.
Yeah.
I think timing is a big issue.
Totally.
With this argument. You're talking about 1991 and it's been so long and you're so separated from it. If this was, you know, because of what my dad's going through, if something suddenly happens in the next couple months, I would not be able to see him brought back to life in a film within the next couple years. Like, that would just not work for me.
Well, and this is where I agree with
years out.
This is where I agree with you, though, Eve, and that is it is about timing. And I think we're all still so close to Carrie Fisher's death, and we haven't seen this final film yet. But you know what? Like, how cool would it be, Barb, for your daughters to see, quote unquote, Carrie Fisher star in a new Star Wars film 10 years from now with the old cinnamon buns on her head?
No, I disagree with you.
Why? Well, it's okay to disagree with you, even though you're wrong. Nice. It's okay to disagree with me.
Like, oh, stop.
It's just we're saying, you know, 10 years from now that, you know, and I know I said this, Leia can't be played by another actor, but maybe 10 years from now she can. Maybe.
Okay.
And that has to do with timing. But 10 years from now you do the Carrie Fisher thing. That's still creepy in my books.
Okay.
I mean, I just can't get past that. And it was the same with Peter Cushing. How long had he been dead since? And then we saw him in Rogue One. I mean,
if they were going to actually use him in Rogue One, it would have, well.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, you totally lost me on that one.
Yeah, I'll explain to you off air. See, he'd been dead. Decomposed, really.
Skeletons. Bones.
A mummy.
He and Tom Cruise. Okay, so what I love about this, what I absolutely love about this is that I think that each of us represent a segment of fandom. Mm-hmm. The majority, quite frankly, probably resides with where you and Eve are. Mm-hmm. I'm probably in the minority there. And maybe it's just completely sick of me to like not mind that. But if I go into a theater, I just like, if I'm suspending belief on so many other things, it's fantasy, right? It's complete fantasy what they're putting on the screen, whether it's Star Wars or whatever else.
So there's nothing that can take you out of that moment that you're experiencing?
Well, I mean, there's things that can take me out of it, obviously.
But within the movie?
Well, yes, of course there's things that can take me out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like when we see Carrie Fisher at the end of Rogue One, if they would have closed Rogue One with the word hope and just showed her from the back, that would have been the perfect ending. Right. But we come and see her eyes and stuff that kind of wrecks it for me. Like that takes me out of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now see, you're I'm falling down a rabbit hole here.
Go, Alice, because, go.
Like the way we are all picturing these actors is just standing straight, talking and interacting with another person. And that is not all human beings do. Like
so
we run, we sleep. We have sex. We go to the bathroom.
Whoa.
Like, that's real life. Do you, like, I would not be able to stomach watching all of life happen with these uncanny valley bots of people. If it was just, you know, little snippets of moments of interactions, that's doable for me. But if you start to really just replicate the human experience with these digitally scanned people who are dead or still alive, but just not young enough anymore. I think that that's creepy. Mm-hmm.
So for you, it's about the technology then. So if they get to a spot where they can make the eyes look real, like you're in.
I don't know. It might.
You
can't do it though. I think that's where
you can't do it.
I think Eve's hesitation is that you can't capture the soul no matter how good the technology is.
Well, time will tell. Time will tell.
But actors don't have souls anyway. So
There's Carl.
Damn.
Boom. Well, and we get into, like, let's just kind of bridge the gap here, right? Let's bring Harrison Ford back into this. I mean, is that not the story of Blade Runner?
I don't think
Runner?
Harrison Ford would be okay
no,
with
no,
this.
No, but I mean, this is the tale of Blade Runner, right? Is right. Replicants are to a point where we can't tell the difference, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. I think that whether we're looking at Blade Runner or we're looking at actually doing this with Star Wars actors or any other actors within a franchise, I see technology getting there at some point. I mean, just read anything about artificial intelligence and the potential threat that artificial intelligence is to humanity.
I've seen Terminator.
Yeah. Go listen to some of the things that good old Tesla dude has to say about it. And he will absolutely blow your mind.
You can remember Joel Edgerton, but you can't remember Elon Musk's name. That's pretty
well.
Cool.
It tells you where
Elon Musk,
Jovan Musk, for men, for men. Yeah, sorry. It's as a history dude. Like I've got all those names rattling around in my brain.
No, I was proud of you for Joel Edgerton because you first said something about that guy who played Uncle Owen, and I'm like, yeah, that's who he is. He's that guy. I've seen him in lots of stuff, and he's really good.
Yeah.
And go see Warrior. If you haven't seen Warrior, he's great in that movie. I can never remember his name. And it's like he's probably the most underappreciated actor of modern times because he does a lot of good stuff, and you're just like, I don't know I don't know his name.
Yeah, or it could be good friend of the pod, Eric Walker. But nonetheless, Brad, any final thoughts? You've just been sitting there like
soaking it all in.
Like the proverbial middle child just waiting for your shot to say something. So any final thoughts on this?
I love that Eve brought up the running aspect of it because I've been thinking that this entire time. Like, what would that look like for an all CGI Han, Leia, and Luke running around? And I just think of like some like really grotesque like like puppets running around. Like, you know, weird. I don't know if you guys have seen Toy Story 4, but like when those marionette puppets are chasing Woody, like that's what I imagine. So I'm like, that would be terrifying to watch. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you're I definitely agree with her, though, if you're just using them for kind of like a stand in scene. And I even think of, again, you brought up Blade Runner 2049, which, I mean, spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen that movie. But, you know, they did that with actress Sean Young, who played Rachel. And so they brought her back into the mix as well. But she's very minimally involved. So I think that's another instance of when it did work, but like if she was heavily involved in the movie, I would kind of feel more of the uncanniness of it. But yeah, I think it's all good things are in moderation. So that's kind of my send off there.
Brad, scarier running, the marionettes in Toy Story 4 or the real Tom Cruise?
Hey, Tom Cruise runs better than any actor in any movie, and I will fight you about that if you want.
I'm going to one up you there and go Tom Cruise on Oprah's couch scary.
Oh yeah. Which is fascinating scary. Because just today, breaking, Katie Holmes and who's the guy that played?
Jamie Foxx.
Thank you, Jamie Foxx. I was going to say that played the blind guy, which clearly narrows it down to Ray Charles. Thank you,
Ray Charles.
And just going to the grab bag and can't pull out any names tonight. Well, listen, fans.
But you can remember Joel Edgerton's name.
Well, listen, because he played opposite Bonnie Peace, who was my first interview, and it's never as good as the first time. So, with that in mind, we're going to wrap things up right after this.
We're not done yet.
All right, it's time, as always, to throw things over to Eve. Eve, what's happening in the galaxy this week?
Well, Team Unmistakably Star Wars welcomes a new member in Michael Harris, who will be joining us as part of our blogging team. And you'll be able to catch all his latest insights and story ideas and blogs on the unmistakablystarwars.com website, as well as on Apple News and all of our social media, from Instagram to Facebook to Twitter, of course. If there is anybody out there that would still like to join our team and share your experience with fandom or any kind of Star Wars related articles that you have brewing, please hop on over to unmistakablystarwars.com, click on any of our recent flagship main show podcast, and at the bottom you will find a link to submit your application. And that sounds complicated, so I'm going to make it easy and write a blog and pin it somewhere. So look for that in the future, friends. As always, review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook. It helps people find our fun little podcast, and we appreciate it greatly. Reminder that our patron-only Google Hangout, Saturday, August 31st at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard, and reminder to call or text us your stuff that we should cover if you are joining us, or even if you're not. And you can do that by calling the hotline at 929-525-1977 or emailing us at unmistakablystarwars@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Evan. Yeah, big welcome to Michael Harris. We'd love some more of you to just kind of express your fandom through some articles. And, you know, we don't necessarily are going to dictate what we want you to write for us, but we want you to be writing stuff about you're passionate about. So, as you've said, give us a call, give us a text, shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Before I go on and thank each and every one of our patrons, Brad, you are now part of the network. And tell folks where they can find you and a little bit about your pod, Friends of the Force.
Yeah, so Friends of the Force is a biweekly show. It is every Monday we have a main show where we dive into a topic. And that is always with a new guest on the show, whether it's a other podcaster or fan. And every Thursday, we have our From a Certain Point of View series where we interview people who are either authors or we even have some actors coming up on the show here and also other fans, other podcasters as well. So you can find the podcast at Friends of Force on Twitter, and you can find me personally at Brad Whipple on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, yep. Welcome aboard. And of course, you need to subscribe like and give him reviews and all that stuff. And then obviously the rest of our team as well, which includes Sky Talkers as well as Geeky Bubble, John Marie and her mom. Actually, both of those crews are headed towards D23, so I'm sure if there is any late breaking stuff about Kenobi or other Star Wars related stuff, you'll hear it through their Twitter accounts first. As always, we want to thank you for hanging out with us. And listen, I love the fact that we kind of got after each other a little bit, and I love that. I absolutely love that. And listen, we want to hear your thoughts on this. If you want to write us or text us or call us and leave a voicemail and tell Barb and Eve why they're wrong, we'd be more than happy to play that on the air next week.
Nope.
If, however, you want to call and agree with them, there's probably not a snowball's chance in hell that you're going to make it on the pod. That being said, we still want to hear from you.
Right?
And as always, we want to thank our patrons. Check it out. I'm getting crazy this week. I'm doing things in reverse alphabetical order. We want to thank Amy Wishman, Michael Ward, Rick Villanueva, Franklin Taylor, Krista Smolensky, Skip Skipton, Aaron Sinner, Connie Shee, Regina Sanders, Kyle Russell, Neil Lowry, Steve Long, Chris Letty, Matthew Keegan, Michelle Grandine, Dave Ackerson, Derek DuVernay, Jim Capron, and from Clashing Sabers himself, the one and only Brandon Boylan. Thank you, patrons, for all of your generous contributions, and we look forward to hanging out with you in a few short weeks. That link will be posted on Patreon for you, so we'll look forward to connecting with you on the interwebs. That's going to do it for this episode, my little tauntauns. The circle is now complete. We'll see you next time in the Digital Docking Bay. Until then, may the Force be with you.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at WeAreEscapePods.com and on Twitter at WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.